maybe Beijing accepts that over time, the role of Hong Kong is going to be weakened.
Hong Kong is in financial trouble, and its future might not be bright. This is Tuesday, October 29th, and you're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook and let us know what you think. Also ahead, as the investigation continues into possible trafficking deaths in the UK, we look at how human trafficking takes place in one Asian nation. And U.S. farmers pay close attention to international trade. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kong has fallen into recession. The city's financial secretary says Hong Kong is unlikely to achieve any growth this year in the wake of 5 months of anti-government protests that erupted in flames over the weekend. Paul Chang said in a blog post Sunday that numbers to be released later this week would show two successive quarters of contraction, and that'll be recorded, and that technical definition of a recession is what that adds up to. Our VOA colleague Steve Miller reached out to Roger Baker, Senior Vice President for Strategic Analysis at American Geopolitical Intelligence Platform and publisher Stratfor, to talk about the situation.
The economic impact is certainly being felt finally, and it should have been expected and anticipated. It is an economic impact, though, that is in part as strong as it is because of other underlying issues, for example, the U.S.-China trade competition, and that has had a huge impact, overall slowdown in Chinese economic activity, which has had a pretty big impact on Hong Kong as well. So this set of protests right now has been a bit of a tipping point beyond for those economic activities. I think that when we talk about does this end or how does it end or is there a tipping point for the government or for the protesters, the Chinese government in some ways has been able to utilize what's going on in Hong Kong as a way to emphasize that democracy is not always the best and most stable way to operate, nor is it necessarily something that's good for economies. And so the Chinese government has gained a little bit out of this in regards to talking about Hong Kong in their own country. And in, quite frankly, sympathetic countries around the world who have also looked at how much of a role the government should have in business and whether or not democracy is necessary for economic activity. So I think that that is something that means that, you know, as we went into the protest, people thought, oh, if there's violence in Hong Kong, Beijing is going to have to go in. But maybe it doesn't have to go in, and maybe Beijing accepts that over time, the role of Hong Kong is going to be weakened. It's going to create these rifts inside its business community with the protesters. And the value of a unique Hong Kong is going to slip inevitably anyway.
Do the optics of the protests and the water cannons and the continued controversy week after week have any negative impact on China per se?
Well, one of the things is Beijing hasn't let Chinese National Police or Chinese National PLA or People's Armed Police or anything like that go into Hong Kong. So this is still the role of the Hong Kong police, not the Chinese state police. Second, quite frankly, I know there's talk of will the protesters get protest fatigue, but I would argue that in general, the West has gotten protest fatigue and started to not look at this nearly as strongly and raise it up nearly as much as they were in the first couple of rounds of violence. So that attention has started to wane, and that may actually wane further as the U.S. continues through this issue of impeachment and the upcoming election cycle.
One of the things that the protesters are continuing to chant these days is five demands, not one less. Can they ever realistically achieve their other four demands that they're seeking for, the universal suffrage, Carrie Lam stepping down, the police investigations, or has Beijing and the Hong Kong authorities pretty much drawn a line in the sand? Is there any room for negotiations that would be meaningful to the protesters?
There is room for four of the five demands. Carrie Lam, there's been, you know, the rumors up and down about her offering to resign in the past, about her potentially stepping down in the future. It wouldn't be surprising if she does not serve out her first term. on the government appointing a more independent investigation into the police. They've already started saying that if the current investigation, which is supposed to finish around December or January, is not accepted by the people, then maybe they'll go for that. Giving freeing the protesters from detention and potentially expunging their records, I think those are within the realm of reality, even if not probable. But that fifth demand, the universal suffrage demand, which is effectively a self-determination demand, that is the one place where I think Beijing simply cannot and will not give in.
Roger Baker, Senior Vice President of Strategic Analysis at the American Geopolitical Intelligence Platform and publisher Stratfor, talking with VOA's Steve Miller. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Negotiations on a sweeping 16-nation free trade deal and a code of conduct for the hotly contested South China Sea are expected to take center stage at a summit of Asian leaders in Bangkok next month. Men in plain clothes claiming to be from a Pakistani intelligence agency ordered the immediate closure Sunday afternoon of a contemporary art installation in Karachi depicting extrajudicial killings by police. Bangladesh's High Court has ordered the government to explain why it has not made more provision for breastfeeding mothers in public spaces and workplaces, saying a failure to do so may be unconstitutional. You are in tune with VOA Asia. The driver of a truck in which 39 people were found dead appeared in a British court Monday as police struggled to identify the victims and where they came from. Police in Essex say 25-year-old Maurice Robinson has been charged with 39 counts of manslaughter and conspiracy to traffic people. He was the first of at least four people to be arrested in connection with the incident, which some say may be one of the biggest cases of human trafficking in British history. Police initially said the migrants were Chinese citizens, but on Saturday indicated some of the victims could have been Vietnamese. Police have appealed to Britain's Vietnamese community to help identify the bodies. Inspector Martin Passmore told reporters his officers had received the most contact from Vietnamese concerned about friends and relatives who may have been on the truck, but said they were not ruling anything out.
What I will say is I know the senior investigating officer remains open-minded. There are lines of inquiry that are set to, of course, establish whether or not there are other wider conspiracies and conspiracies involved in this. And, of course, we are wide, you know, the lines of inquiry are set to identify the wider conspiracy.
Meanwhile, at a news briefing Monday, Chinese Foreign Minister Gung Shuang said China has been in contact with both Vietnamese and British authorities about determining the identities of the victims. The Chinese embassy in Britain, he said, is in close contact with the British side, asking them to provide further effective information to be able to ascertain the victim's identity. The foreign ministry took exception last week when British police maintained that the victims were Chinese nationals. Over the last few days, Vietnamese families have come forward saying they fear their loved ones may be among the victims. One family seems to have received a text from, says to have received a text from a 26-year-old woman as she was dying, saying, "I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, my journey abroad does not succeed. Mom, I love you and Dad very much. I'm dying because I can't breathe. Mom, I'm so sorry." The truck containing the bodies was found Wednesday in an industrial park in Grays, 40 kilometers east of London. George Belitsos leads the Iowa Network Against Human Slavery. He recently traveled to China and spoke with someone he knows, former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, now the U.S. ambassador to China. I spoke with Dr. Belitsos.
I did spend 3 weeks crossing China and trying very hard to uncover just what the trafficking situation is and what is being done with it. And let me say, I was surprised and disappointed by what I found. They're really not even meeting minimal standards for the elimination of either sex or labor trafficking. Both women being trafficked out and children and men out of their country, as well as the people from Vietnam and a number of other countries, North Korea, that are coming into China and being trafficked, mostly for labor trafficking. Also, they have a big, very big problem with forced marriage, which is a form of trafficking, especially when it involves young girls, teenage girls. Both they have a shortage of women in China, and so there are a number of countries that are trafficking and parents who sell their children into traffickers, and they're trafficked to as child brides or just sex slaves for men in China.
What is it that China is or is not doing to give you such a negative attitude or negative finding about the state of trafficking there?
Well, let me begin with the massage businesses in the United States and actually all over the world. These Chinese, this is what really got me involved with China, and was why I met with Ambassador Branstad. We have a problem with so-called massage therapy businesses that are actually a ruse for prostitution. And most of these businesses in this country, and there we estimate that there are 9,000 of them operating in the U.S., are trafficked young women from China who are being controlled by traffickers, being moved from city to city, state to state, across the whole country, and they keep moving them around. That's one way they maintain their control. So we recognize that we had this problem here in Iowa and all across the United States, and with Governor Branstad being in China, I wanted to find out what the Chinese government was doing to try to intervene and stop the flow of these victims from China all across the world, but in particular in my own state. And Governor Branstad said he did not know of any organized criminal syndicate that is working out of China and shipping these women to the United States and to our own state here in Iowa, USA, but that he would look into it and ask, make them aware that this is a growing problem in his old home state and across the U.S.
What can the United States do as far as this situation is concerned?
I think that U.S. government is going country to country, and every year they now are coming out with a report on what and they're rating each country as far as their efforts to combat trafficking and to collaborate and coordinate with our country. And this last year, 2018 Trafficking in Persons report by the U.S. State Department not only gave a rating to China that was very low, they actually downgraded China in 2018 to the lowest tier, which is 3. The Chinese section of the report really blasts China and makes many recommendations as to what China needs to do to stem trafficking and slavery.
Dr. George Belitsos leads the Iowa Network Against Human Slavery. Happening now in Asia, U.S. President Donald Trump said Monday he expected to sign a significant part of the trade deal with China ahead of schedule, but did not elaborate on the timing. Leaders of the world's two biggest economies are working to agree on the text for a Phase 1 trade agreement announced by Trump on October 11th. He said he had hoped to sign the deal with China's President Xi Jinping next month at a summit in Chile. This is VOA Asia. Success on the international trade front is a top issue for U.S. farmers. As VOA's Kane Farabaugh reports, this segment of the American landscape, which largely voted for President Donald Trump in 2016, faces difficult economic conditions ahead of next year's presidential contest because of higher costs to operate farms, falling profits, and an uncertain trade environment.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, or TPP, the United States signed with 11 other countries in 2016, would have given U.S. farmers more places to market their crops. Despite then-candidate Donald Trump's promise to withdraw from the TPP, largely on concerns over the impact to U.S. manufacturing jobs, Illinois farmer Wendell Schauman supported him, despite wanting the TPP agreement.
You're a farmer, you have a PhD, you're well-traveled, you understand how trade agreements and international trade works. And you voted for Trump.
Yes.
Since 2016, not only did the U.S. withdraw from the TPP, it dismantled the 1994 North American Free Trade Agreement. A replacement, the United States-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement, or USMCA, is under review in the U.S. Congress. Meanwhile, the Trump administration simultaneously is waging a trade war with one of its biggest crop buyers, China, which imposed tariffs on U.S. corn and soybeans in retaliation for U.S. tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum. This has affected profits for Schauman, but not his support for Trump's reelection.
What I hear on the other side, I'll happily support what he's doing versus what they're proposing.
Schauman, who worries a Democratic president may impose environmental regulations affecting his farm operations, is not alone.
I was excited to see a Republican take back the White House, but I love the stance that we're taking.
I think he's doing what is right.
I think the majority of our people by far are still supportive of the president.
Illinois Farm Bureau's Mark Gebhardt says Trump has been able to blunt the impact of tariffs through payments to farmers from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Market Facilitation Program. This year, it cost taxpayers about $16 billion, on top of roughly $15 billion in 2018.
We want trade, not aid. We don't want to have to live hoping that we get another round of market facilitation payments. We really need, again, to find just a final way forward on not only the tariffs with China, but USMCA, Japan, EU, all these other issues that are out there.
Yet the lack of substantial trade progress during his first term causes concern among some Trump voters.
I really feel like he doesn't understand what happens out here in these flyover states. He's walking a very thin line with what's been happening in the ag sector.
Megan Dwyer says the Trump administration's waivers for oil refineries to use corn-based ethanol, the president's tweeting, and his mixed results on trade could affect her vote.
Some of his comments recently around ag are frustrating to me.
Amid an ongoing impeachment inquiry in the U.S. Congress, a straw poll conducted by Farm Journal Pulse in September showed 76% of 1,138 farmers polled support Trump in 2020, down from 79% in July.
I think there's a lot of people that are disappointed, but it's going to come down to the choice they give us. And right now, for most farmers, I don't think he's going to lose many.
Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Kirkwood, Illinois.
Coming up, a move to ban the streaming of terror attacks. This is VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A Hong Kong reporter disrupted a police news conference Monday to protest what she called escalating violence by officers against journalists covering that city's pro-democracy protest. The reporter interrupted the briefing by reading a statement alleging police mistreatment and obstruction of reporters covering the chaotic demonstrations. You're listening to VOA Asia. Questions arose after a gunman in Christchurch, New Zealand, live-streamed a video of himself opening fire at a mosque earlier this year. That terrorist killed 51 and injured dozens. Now British police are turning to social media companies to stop such broadcasts before they start. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
This police training exercise in southeast England prepares law enforcement for an active shooter takedown.
We have highly skilled firearms officers who train in various different situations to address firearms threats. That gives us the opportunity to capture footage from the viewpoint of a shooter.
The training follows the terror attack in Christchurch, New Zealand earlier this year that was live-streamed on social media.
The distress caused to victims and relatives of victims, knowing that this footage is being shared, and therefore a lot more focus after the Christchurch attack.
Police say exercises are as much about training officers as they are staying ahead of the next attack.
By sharing that with Facebook, they're going to be able to build algorithms to identify this type of material when it's loaded onto the internet very quickly and prevent that being shared further. Working closely with Facebook is going to enable us to reduce the proliferation of this material online, and anything that can do that has to be a good thing.
Just a few weeks ago, a gunman in Germany opened fire outside a synagogue during Yom Kippur services. He live-streamed the attack. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia. A group of EU lawmakers will visit Indian Kashmir Tuesday, the first foreign delegation since the special status of the region was revoked, according to Indian officials, and hours before a grenade attack underlined the volatility of the situation. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. You're listening to VOA Asia. In Ivory Coast, an artist works hard for his money, painting scenes with pen, brush, and paint, even though he has neither arms nor legs. VOA's Jim Randall tells us how he does it.
Without arms or legs, artist Adama Traore of Abidjan finds a unique way to make his art. Line by line, stroke by stroke, color by color. Missing limbs since birth, he attended a center for disabled youth at 9, where he learned ways to paint.
When I was a child, my mom sent me to this white lady named Marie Odile in the Center for the Disabled. I learned to paint there. I worked with gouache markers. Thanks to her, there were more than 100 disabled people in the center. The lady passed away and I ended up in the streets.
It was a difficult life after his teacher and mentor died. Just getting around was hard. Taxi drivers would not pick him up, assuming he had no money. But he kept painting colorful landscapes and portraits, earning some recognition and money. Traore slowly built up savings from his artwork and used it to open a small art studio. He got married and now commutes to work by taxi. This driver, impressed by the artist's determination, now gives him both a ride and a bit of a discount on the fare.
Every day I pick him and drop him off, and the evening again. I take him back home. Honestly, money doesn't matter. It's courage.
Traore says painting is therapeutic and lifts spirits.
Painting heals. Painting boosts morale. Painting cleans the spirit. Become Traore Adama. If I didn't paint, I don't know what I would do. I can't be a carpenter. I can't be a mason. But I do paint. If I'm just sitting here, people would say, this one is doing nothing. He's a beggar. But when they see me working, they're saying this one is a worker.
That work earns Traore about $84 for each painting. Jim Randall, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes, also SoundCloud. Download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you wherever you go. Just visit our voanews.com program page. See us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. And let's hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Our thanks to Tracy Carter, our director, our engineer, Nelson Lopes. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a good day ahead.